Welcome to another episode of Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. This is episode 327. Good Lord. I'm Kevin.
I'm Simon, and nobody's killed me yet.
I'm Doug, and I'm alive as well. I don't know why anyone would want to kill me.
Oh, I know many reasons why people want to kill me. That's fine. Dixon!
We actually have a pretty jam-packed episode. We're going to be discussing like maybe 10 movies. So,
Doug's, we got Kevin back. We had to have a bigger episode than normal, but I have a few things I want to discuss before we get into it. Cause I want to annoy you guys. I have good news, Kevin. I finished all the 322 movies, the 2022 movies, nothing left for me to watch that I know of.
Wow. You've watched every movie from 2020
that I wanted to watch. Is done. I finished.
Okay. How about 2023?
I have one left called Inspection. I have about an hour left of that to watch. Mm-hmm. 2024, I just have Super 8 Part 2. What's it called? Senses 8? That Stephen Amell film that just came out on Netflix. Code 8. Sorry. I'm watching Code 8 right now. I have Spaceman with Adam Sandler. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
And something called Mastermind. Megamind? There's a new Megamind movie.
Is it a sequel to the Megamind from
I think it's a prequel. I don't know yet because I don't read anything. So how am I doing, Doug? Am I doing okay?
I think so.
I lie. There's some Hilary Swank movie that just came out I haven't seen. It's on my list. And she's like helping people out or something.
Never heard of it.
You seen Driveaway Dolls?
I seen Driveaway Dolls last week.
Lisa Frankenstein.
I saw Lisa Frankenstein.
Argyle.
Saw Argyle.
Self-Reliance.
What movie?
Self-Reliance.
No.
Johnson makes his directorial debut in Self-Reliance, a sci-fi dystopian comedy where he plays the lead.
Don't think it got a theatrical release in a major market release.
Okay.
Like mass release. I don't usually watch them. See, not bad. So what have you guys been up to? Doug? Kevin? You're home for a little while, Kevin?
Yeah, just getting ready for the next shows. Toronto Comic Con, Fan Expo Cleveland, Fan Expo Philadelphia, Calgary Expo.
How come you don't do Fan Expo New Jersey to help Doug out?
I don't know. I mean, Wizard used to have a New Jersey show. I don't know why we don't do one, but
New Jersey is close to New York and Philadelphia, so any Jersey people would just go to either of those.
Yeah, a lot of New Jersey people come to Philly.
Do you go to New York Comic Con, Doug?
I haven't for a few years, but yeah, I've been.
I have. I was at New York Comic Con once. Loved it. I like how they had a bunch of old artists I'd never seen in other places. I have a Don Heck sketch somewhere in my house.
Nice.
So I paid $5 for it.
Nice.
So I've got that in my New York Comic Con experience.
You can see the old heckler before he passed.
Yeah. Well, he was funny. Okay, quick story. I go up to him. Are you sketching? He goes, yeah. I go, how much? He goes, $5. I go, here you go. He goes, you know what? This guy didn't come back. Here, have this one. It hands me a sketch. Nice. It was pretty done. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Nice.
So Doug will like this story. I think it was Frank Springer. Is he do Judo Master? Maybe the wrong guy.
Frank Springer did The Invaders and The Shadow. Okay.
I'm in New York City. Michael Cabone used to do those church conventions or something.
Carbonero.
So it doesn't matter. So I'm bugging the guy, whoever did Judo Master, to a sketch. And I mean bugging him.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, I'll do it. And I walk off, go back to my booth. How about? I come back. The guy is gone, Doug, with my sketchbook. I look around. I look at the table. Where are you sitting? My sketchbook is sitting there. Full of sketches, just sitting in New York City on the table. Nobody near it, nothing. Just a random black sketchbook. Mike, Zach, everybody I've met over the years, all in one book, sitting there. How's that?
Wow, you were lucky.
And nobody sold my book. And Tim Sale, same issue.
Well, I'll teach you not to annoy somebody, I guess.
I guess so. I should have come back earlier. Tim Sale, same thing. I met Tim Sale at one of the last Fed Expo I was at. I think it was Tim Sale. I might be one after that. So I gave him my book. And I said, look, I'm going to have to go move my car. And I'll be gone for about an hour. He's like, no problem. I come back. No Tim Sale to be found. Gone. The guy goes, hey, are you looking for Tim? I said, yeah. He goes, oh, here's your book. And hands my book back. Tim Sale was gone. But I did get a Tim Sale. So there's two sketch stories about my book almost disappearing.
Yes, he had places to be.
Yeah, Dale Keon, Adam's Tim Sale's in there. A lot of people have moved on. All in the same book, yes. And I can't remember. The guy that did Hulk. Paul Ryan's in there. Ruby Nebris. Trying to think. Shelley Moldoff.
I seem to remember that book. I know I've looked at it.
Yeah, I still have it.
Yeah, I remember you had some Sheldon Moldoff.
I have it. What the hell?
Yeah, he's trying to break back in.
What happened there? My screen just went like completely blank.
Oh, there he is. I hear him.
I can't see you guys. So just continue on with the show. I'm sure my Zoom will eventually fix itself.
Are you? There we go.
That was the most bizarre thing. My screen just went boop and Zoom dropped me.
Yeah, so that's how I've just been working on con stuff myself. How about you, Doug? Yeah, you've lost your extra features background.
I know, it's gone.
You guys now you just have a green screen. Sorry, and you're guys. Frozen.
I'm not frozen. No.
Your picture's frozen. I can hear you, though. So
this is weird. Well, keep going. Maybe I can figure this out.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, I've just gotten over COVID, so I haven't done much. But I did get to go see Dune last night. So I went with my son and we had a Dune-tastic time, even though they were sold out of the popcorn buckets.
Hold on.
A lot of the theaters are only given a couple dozen.
How come we didn't get a popcorn bucket?
What?
No popcorn bucket? That is disappointing, Doug.
No, it was sold out.
It sounds like you're drinking. You're drinking.
I'm not drinking in any way.
I was talking to a theater manager, and he told me that. All right. That they've been limiting the number of buckets per theater. Because I guess that there's been a lot of funny memes about them. So. Because it's very hard to get popcorn out of that bucket. You stick your hand in and the worm tendrils stop your hands from bringing up the popcorn. So.
Yeah, it's just, we just wanted one as like a say-so that we could say, hey, we got the
too.
Popcorn
I
bucket.
Want one.
Exactly. I would repurpose it as a Sarlacc pit.
Exactly.
There you go.
Okay. I'm done. Start the show. Mm-hmm. I got nothing else to say. Yeah, oh, wait. Show. I do have one thing left. Since my buddy Shane's going to be listening to the show. Hi, Shane. Enjoy the show. That's it. You got you're going to pause me on that? Okay.
Hello, Shane.
All right. All right. I guess we can just jump right in since I mentioned it already. We could go right to Dune Part 2. We got that directed by Denis Villeneuve, starring Timothy Chalamet, Zendaya, Rebecca Ferguson, Javier Bardem, James Brolin, Austin Butler, Florence Pugh, Dave Bautista, Christopher Walken, Lea Seydoux, Stellan Skarsgård, just many, many, many people who are very white except for Zendaya in this movie. And I guess Javier Bardem is Mexican as well.
Especially those Harkonnens, they're really white.
Yes, under that black sun.
Yeah. Who wants to kick it off?
I'll go. I had an absolute blast with this movie. I would say this is without a doubt, the first five-star movie of 2024 for me. Just the effects were incredible. The story was great. The acting, save for one cast member, I would say, was really well done. The only person I would say who didn't bring their A-game was Christopher Walken. He kind of just showed up looking like he just wanted a paycheck, but everybody else gave it their all. Yeah. Rebecca Ferguson was just fantastic. Like, I love Jessica in the first movie, and then in this movie, she became scary. She just wanted to manipulate everybody just to get, just so her son could live. Yeah, just an incredible movie, very well shot. I say even better than the first one. I love this one.
I'll go next. I mean, I agree. Did you see it in IMAX?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, you have to see this movie in IMAX with the aspect ratio. Just fills up the screen, your entire field of vision. Beautiful graphics. There were scenes in there, I'm like, how the hell did he do that? Like the scene when the Harkonnen soldier sort of flies up the side of the rock very slowly, almost like he's treading water up a hill. Beautiful, beautiful film to look at. And so different from the first one. Having rewatched the first one just last weekend, I was like, this is tonally, thematically, everything is the exact opposite of part one. And he picked a good spot for the switch, right? So he stops at the Atreides' lowest point, and then Paul and Jessica rebuild from there. It doesn't shy away from the fact that that Paul and his mother use the myths sown by the Bene Gesserit to their advantage. I thought Paul himself is quite the manipulator of he just wants to be one of the Fremen. He wants to learn from Chani, but he's using them too. During the whole time, he's manipulating them. He hides the ducal signet ring in his little pocket. He's still the duke. He's still there. His whole point is to destroy the Harkonnens and or the power of his family. Beautifully acted by everyone. Austin Butler is a real revelation in this. I mean, it's funny to see Elvis as a psychotic murderer, but hey, he pulls it off.
Than Sting in a blue bikini brief.
Oh. Apparently, Sting offered him the blue leather underwear to practice it, but he doesn't. But when he's on screen, he's probably the most frightening on screen villain since, say, Darth Vader in a science fiction movie. There's a scene where he goes into the Fremen siege and he's tied, and they've confronted one of the Fatican warriors, and she's just like, she's not bowing at all, but he's just this terrifying, like he's just darkness incarnate. Rabin was the beast, but Fade is a calculating psychopath. He's like the anti-Paul. He's been bred, the bloodlines have all been bred through. He is the next choice in line. If Paul Atreides was destroyed, Fade Rautha is the chosen savior of the universe, essentially the male savior. So he could just as easily be the next messiah should things go in a slightly different direction. Anyway, the 3 hours fly by. Just fly by. Mm-hmm. The action sequences are outstanding. I mean, having known this story, it's not radically different from the old Badoo movies. I mean, it's the old Doom movie is kind of like a plot highlights reel, in my opinion, of the book, and with a weird tacked on ending with the rain on Arrakis, which is not what we see in this movie. And they wisely chose to keep Ilea in the womb for the next movie if they do another one. Although we do get to see Anya Taylor-Joy in a vision of her future. Yeah, top notch. I agree. 5 out of 5. Best movie of the year so far. Going to be a tough one to beat.
Yes.
Well, being a Dune fanatic, and no, it rained in book 4. Thank you. Not book 2, not book 3, book 4. It's first time it rains on the planet, so don't tell me rains anywhere in Dune. I don't want to hear about it because everybody's dead. by the time you get to book four. And then you got Paul's son as a sandworm. It's really kind of trippy. So I got to agree with you guys. How do we do this? Like, literally, that sand shots, I'm like, this can't be all CGI. Like,
no, he shot in the desert in the Middle East.
But it looks amazing.
I mean, they definitely computer enhanced some of the dunes, so they went on in the background. But you know, a lot of it is actual landscapes.
Listen, being a Dune fan, writing almost all the books Herbert wrote, I've read them all. I haven't read his son's books. I gotta say, this captures exactly what I wanted from the books. I was missing some minor things, but it's just me being a complete. It's like a lot of the headspace with the daughter. They did very well. I was quite impressed the way he did it. And I was kind of like, I got it. They can't do what I want, so I'll accept that. I thought everybody had a character arc. I thought everybody had something to do.
Yeah.
Which was nice to see for a change. I mean, characters were coming to life for me. I mean, I was just like, the 3 hours flew by. I could have had 5 more hours of this and I would have been fine.
Yeah,
I absolutely love this movie. I mean, it's winning best cinematography, isn't it, next year? I don't think it can lose.
Yeah, I don't think it can lose. I mean, it's going to win a lot next year, I believe.
I mean, those spaceships looked real when they were coming in. Like, everything to me seemed like a real thing I could touch. Now, I guess my big question is, would this beat Oppenheimer?
No. Because the Academy would give a drama an award over a sci-fi film.
Probably true. But I'm just saying, I mean, what's his default? Batista was great in it. The end scene is great. You can't recognize Elvis. I mean, what more could you want from this film?
I will say just one minor complaint. On the drive home from the movie theater, I told my son, did you get in the movies that the spice comes from the worms? And he said, no. That, like, that's the one thing that...
But they talk about it.
When?
When the worm is coming, they so here comes the spice. They do mention it right early. Did they not, Kevin?
No, I don't remember that, to be honest. I mean, they do show us that the melange... not the melange, the water of life comes from the worm. Because we saw them drowning a baby worm and extracting the blue stuff. And we know that the spice causes the Fremen's eyes to turn blue.
Yes.
From consumption of it. So, but no, they well, don't really get it to that.
Maybe I'm just a book nerd, so I knew that. And I just but thinking I saw it.
Spice, yeah. I you know, actually, another thing I'd have to agree with you, Doug, is Christopher Walken was kind of wasted in this movie.
Yes. He doesn't do anything. He just sort of sits there going, ah.
You know what? What would have made it to me is if at one point he said, bring me the head of the fat man, the Baron. Yeah. You know, like something like that. Like, but there was nothing. He's just kind of there.
But know? I will say Florence Pugh in her small role, she was amazing. I mean, Pugh, she's one of the best actors working today. I mean, she could take a role that small and just – do what she did with it. She was incredible.
Yeah. Agreed.
Okay. I don't know. We all love Dune. What are we going to say? It's
IMAX. Yeah,
don't walk, run to see this movie.
In IMAX.
In IMAX.
Yes. Well, how about this movie? How about Madame Web? Should people go run to see that?
Yes. The other way.
They should run away quickly and
run away and find something to do. Look in the bin for a Dune head the sand popcorn thingy.
Oh, yeah, well, that's right.
Well, let's see. Madame Web was directed by S.J. Clarkson, starring Dakota Johnson, Sydney Sweeney, Isabel Merced, Celeste O'Connor, Tahar Rahim, and Mike Epps. I will be 100% honest. I have not seen this movie. I'm using the fact that I had COVID as an excuse for not going to see it when the real reason is I just didn't give a crap and didn't want to go. But I believe you guys have seen it, so I'm dying to find out what you guys think.
think we told you already.
Yeah, we've both seen it. they're all started. I mean, these Sony movies set in the Spider-Verse, but that don't have Spider-Man in them, that kind of mention Spider-Man characters, but not actually have Spider-Man. Like in this one, Peter Parker is a baby in his mother Mary's womb. And there's some comedy bits with a baby shower where the girls are trying to guess the name of her baby. And no one guesses Peter, and they don't actually bring up Peter at all. But we meet Ben Parker, who's his uncle, and we skirt around all this stuff. The movie's set in 2003, so it's 20 years in the past. And I don't know. To say this movie has a plot is giving it a generous plot point. There's nothing to this movie. It's really a batch of sad coincidences. And let's just say the prime motivation story is, in the past, the main character's mother met the villain because she was looking for a spider for some reason, for health properties.
Yes, correct.
He wanted the spider to give himself powers. So in the process of trying to steal that spider, instead of just stealing it, he shoots her and a bunch of other people. And she is saved by the spider people who are colored red and have web-like strands of things around their bodies to look kind of like proto Spider-Man. She's saved in the cave of, a viscous fluid or something like that, where Chrissy or whatever her name is, Webb, gets born with some abilities, which are not, they don't manifest till she's in her 20s. So 20 years later, something happens to her and she starts seeing bits of the future. And meanwhile, across town, Ezekiel, the villain, who isn't a villain in the Spider-Man comics, but he's a villain here. He sees he's seeing images of himself being killed by three spider women who are currently teenagers. They're adults when they kill him in his vision. So he decides to steal government surveillance software to try and find the teenagers and kill them. And that's the plot of the movie.
That's
correct. Basically on the run from him as he tries to eliminate them from possibly killing him. And so meanwhile, she has visions of having to save them all.
Yeah.
A bored cast doing boring things, boring action.
Yep.
Some of the time skip stuff is kind of interesting.
No. But,
boring, boring, boring. Stupid. She steals a cab, takes the license plate off, even though the cabs have a number on the top. And she still has that cab a month after it happens. And not a single person has noticed it's a stolen cab without plates.
Nobody. So, no, why would you notice that in New York City?
Stupid. The whole movie is just stupid.
Well, I'll go a little bit different.
Right.
The woman finds the spider. The mom finds the spider. Then she gets killed.
Nothing redeeming about it, in my opinion.
The woman finds the spider. The mom finds it. That's why she gets killed.
Yes.
She goes, I found the spider. 30 seconds later, dead. I'm sitting there, Doug. I literally, if you pause this movie halfway through and ask me what was going on, I couldn't tell you. I have no idea.
But
I have no idea what was going on halfway through this movie. Confused.
She's taken to a cave of other spiders, though, and those spiders save the kid.
Yes. She will come and find me one day and want to know who I am. I wish I could give you a better point, Doug, but I literally did not understand.
Conveniently, she sees a vision of her mother doing stuff before she was born.
Yes. I did not understand this film. I don't understand why the girls were in this movie. I don't understand the point of this movie. I don't know what Dakota Johnson was attempting in this movie. I was literally confused. A good half of it.
Apparently she fired her management team after this movie because she thought she was going to star in an MCU movie. And instead she got stuck in this weird doghouse of a Sony picture. I like Morbius better than this.
Morbius made sense. I understood Morbius.
Yeah. Wow.
Doug, literally, I was so confused. So She gets her powers, and they literally don't start explaining them to them. I'm like, oh, I get it. She can relive what just happened. So she starts. Like, something will happen, and then she's like, oh, no, got to rewind and do it again. I'm like, oh, my God, why? Why are we prolonging my pain?
Yeah.
And it's just shit like this. I'm like, this has got to go.
I saw with an audience that thought it was a comedy. They laughed at every bit of bad dialogue.
I couldn't figure out what Sydney Sweeney was doing in this film. Did she take the wrong script too?
Yeah, I believe so.
Like, she should fire her agents. This was terrible.
The only time they're in costume is in Visions.
This will be my worst movie of the year. It's going to be hard to beat it already.
Yeah, so we've got a best and the worst already in the
same. On the same one. It's on because I'm trying to keep my list every year. I do try to write them down as I see them.
We still have Kraven that coming down the line, so it could be.
I don't know if I can even watch it. I hate Venom so much. Isn't that coming this year too?
Venom 3 is coming. I actually don't mind Venom, but yeah.
Okay, Kevin loves his crap. So I saw on the internet that people are noticing in the sneak preview for Venom, the screenshot, he's wearing the same shirt he was at the end of whatever Morbius or Spider-Man he was in. He's wearing the same shirt, so they think it's a continuation. So just for Kevin, I'm going to tell him that.
Okay. Well, it's supposed to be a continuation of.
Well, they're all excited about that. I don't see Madam Web people. It's a pile of garbage.
Yeah.
I got nothing to say about it. Literally nothing happens. I can't give you a plot because Kevin gave it to you, and he did a better job than the movie did.
Yeah, there's no, I mean, and she discovers she has powers, so she can see things in the future to make slight, subtle changes to it, and then she learns she has another ability in that she can be in multiple places at one time. So she saves, the three girls are both hanging off a bridge at the same time, so she saves them all by using her bi-location or tri-location power, and then she gets, I guess her spine gets severed, and then she goes blind.
Does that make sense? Who cares? Move on. I don't care. This movie's a pile of crap. Do not watch it.
All right. So I guess, will you feel any better about The Boys in the Boat? Directed by George Clooney.
No, I won't.
Starring Callum Turner, Jack Mulhern, and Joel Edgerton.
Oh.
So do you want to go first on this one, Simon?
Oh, my God. I don't know why I decided to put this on the list. I think because it's February and there wasn't a lot out because we're a couple weeks behind on recording this, people. So Dune wasn't supposed to be out, but MWeb wasn't out. So those were added. Doug, this is how not to make a movie interesting. Literally find a character that has no motivation other than he needs money. Make him make some boats. Put in the water until I don't care. We all know they win. They wouldn't have made the movie otherwise. I didn't like anybody in this movie. Not one character they gave me was interesting. Did I miss something here? Like, George Clooney's directing is pedestrian at best. Like, I wish there was more to his directing, but there's zero. It's basic. Your son isn't even out of film school, and I think he could have done a better job. Like,
he probably wouldn't have wanted to do this story. I think this story is just boring.
I understand they won. Whoop-de-doo. There's nothing here. There's no conflict. There's no emotion. We all know they're going to win, so you got to give me something on the inside. What, them running around supposed to be the highlight of my day and rowing the boat and getting yelled at? Him falling asleep while he's studying? What is interesting here?
Nothing. I mean, I'm going to be in complete agreement with you. I mean, I remember George Clooney came out of the gate as a director really strong. I loved Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. I loved Good Night and Good Luck.
Yes.
Then he started to slip a bit. Didn't care at all for that football film he did, Leatherheads, I think it was called.
Renee Wells. Renee was in it. Zellweger.
Then he did that Monuments Men, which I thought was an interesting story. It was an interesting story, but the movie was not very good.
Terribly edited. It made no sense, too. Actually, that was better than Madame Web, though.
Fair. It probably had a better cast, I mean. But
Sydney Sweeney's a master thespian.
Yeah, but the other one had Matt Damon, Monuments Men. So
I'm joking.
Monuments Men had Matt Damon.
Nothing
is better than Matt Damon.
True.
But then he did that Netflix movie about the future or whatever, and now the like
did we see
Clooney
that, Kevin?
Is definitely
okay.
Clooney is slipping here. This movie was just boring, uninteresting, very white, another very white movie. I didn't care for it at all.
There's nothing to care about. Literally nothing. Zero to care about this film. Who are you going to care about? I don't care if Joel Edgerton loses his job. I don't care. Really don't know anything about him. They take me to his home life. I'm like, uh-huh. That's nice. The other guy likes to study economics and date the hot blonde and fall asleep. Got it. Don't care. This was rough.
Yeah, but was it as rough as Role Play, which was that's a Prime Video movie directed by Thomas Vincent, starring Kaley Cuoco, David Oyelowo, Connie Nielsen, and Bill Nighy is in this as well. I didn't give my score for Boys in the Boat. I would give that a 1 out of 5. Role Play, I'd give 1.5. I'd give 1.5 out of 5, so it's a little better. But that's really only because David Oyelowo and Kaley Cuoco, they at least had some chemistry together.
They did. They did.
Everything else about this movie was just very cliched, very been there, done that. The action wasn't even very good, in my opinion. There's not much to recommend about this, but I'd recommend it slightly more than Boys in the Boat.
Well, you are correct on recommending it more than Boys in the Boat, but I actually watched these back to back. I watched Boys in the Boat one night, then I watched this the next night. I'm like, this is awful. I don't get the Kaley Cuoco phenomenon. I think she's a terrible actor. She is unimpressive in everything I've ever seen her in, including Big Bang Theory.
David Oyelowo
is an excellent actor. I enjoyed him. Bill Nighy, I don't know, that was the whole plot with the Bill Nighy thing, I thought it was kind of interesting up until then, and then I find it just starts falling apart after that. And then the end of the film is just a mess.
Yes.
Who cares? I'm like, this is dumb. I don't like this. And she was another movie about a woman lying to her husband.
I think it would have been so much better if they went for an R rating and made the violence John Wick level violence. I think that would have made the movie much more enjoyable and easier to watch.
I don't think they had the budget. I think the whole problem with this film, they have no budget to make the film better.
Okay.
I mean, everything seems to be one location, one location. They don't seem to do a lot of outdoor locations. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Nothing seems to be very elaborate. Seems everything can be pretty cheaply rented, whatever they're using. And I do agree on the chemistry, but it was just so friggin' dull.
Yes.
This is why they get released in February, because they stink. And there's nothing else out there to watch, so people will watch them like me.
Well, the next movie, you said you watched Boys in the Boat and Role Play nights in a row. Mm-hmm. I literally watched Role Play and Lift back to back. I watched them back to back to get them in for this podcast. Lift is the Netflix film directed by F. Gary Gray, starring Kevin Hart, Gugu Mbatha-Raw, and Vincent D'Onofrio. Do you want to talk about this or should I?
I can start. This is another terrible film. It was like, I love heist movies. I'm sorry, I really do. And I'm like, Kubo by Rock can usually do it. Kevin Hart drives me nuts. He completely up the wall. And I'm like, oh, Vincent D'Onofrio, okay, he might be able to save this. Now, of all of these three, this is probably the only one you could probably stomach for an evening that you might be able to get through without going, God, this is terrible. But it is really bad. It's got a nice budget. I think they do well with their budget. It looks nice. They move around the world nicely. The heists are kind of fun at times. It doesn't go anywhere. The premise is dumb. Jen Renault is collecting a nice paycheck for this thing. I mean, I thought everything on the plane was silly. I thought the end was really dumb. And I'm just like, what happened to Gabba Goo Barra? What happened? I thought you had a career. I guess I was wrong. You don't. This is terrible. Kevin Hart drives me nuts and continually does.
Yeah, I agree with you. This was not good. I gave this one 1 out of 5. So a little less than a role play for me, just because I felt nobody in this movie had chemistry together.
None.
I felt like they were all acting at each Hold other on. Instead of with each other.
I like the woman from Money Heist. She's this place.
I don't know who that one is.
She flies the plane. The one flying the plane, that's the girl from Money Heist. That's Tokyo from Money Heist, who I quite like as an actor. But she hasn't really had a breakout role. She just pops up in things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... She left no impression on me. I will be 100% honest.
I just know her from Money Heist. Okay?
Okay. That's fine. But yeah, this movie was... It was lame. It wanted to be like an Ocean's 11 or something, yep. But just wasn't. Didn't have the talent behind it. F. Gary Gray, I think he's a decent director. I've seen some films of his that I like. This was not one of them. It's just generic, straight to Netflix kind of action movie that just isn't very good.
Hey, guys, just wanted you guys to let you know, thanks for listening. And Kevin disappeared, so if you came here for Kevin, he's gone. But you still got me and Doug, so your choice.
Yes, and you also have The Beekeeper, directed by David Ayer, starring Jason Statham, Emily Raver Lampman, Josh Hutcherson, and Jeremy Irons. I think it's my turn to go first
it
on this one.
It is your turn, sir. Yes, it is.
Just like the previous two movies we discussed, very cliche. You knew what you were going to get when you go into this. But I absolutely love this movie. I am an unabashed Jason Statham fan. And this movie gave me everything I wanted in a Jason Statham film. Action was fun. It was preposterous. He didn't really use a gun until the final action scene at the end. So when people are coming to get him in his farm, he takes their gun, but instead of shooting them with it, he stabs them with the barrel of the shotgun. So that was awesome. My only complaint really is that he looked dumb in a baseball cap. I think that baseball cap on his head just looked ridiculous. But I love that the bad guys were so vile and disgusting. You just wanted to see them get their violent comeuppance by Jason Statham. I do question why an obviously British man wants to protect the United States of America. But you know what? I'm going to let that slide because Jason Statham kicked so much ass in this movie. I gave it 3 out of 5 on the Letterboxd score for this one.
And people, if you want to follow Doug on Letterboxd, it's Douglas Hainer, I think, on Letterboxd.
I think so. I forget if it's Doug Hainer or Douglas Hainer. I do not know, to be perfectly honest.
You can
honest.
Find him. I knew Beekeeper would be bad right when it starts off. I'm like, this. I didn't like the shooting style. I thought it looked kind of silly at the beginning. I'm like, it's February. It's Jason Statham. This is going to be rough. That's fine. And then we got to the scene where the guy is talking and running his spiel. And look, we got a live one. I'm like, really? We're having a game show? It was almost like a game show setting with Josh Edgerton.
Kind of.
Then Jason Statham comes in, kicks everybody's asses in there. And then he goes to the next place. I'm like, are we still at the same spot? Because it looks exactly like the one we just left.
No, they went from, I think the second one was in Boston. So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Or was it New York? They go from like Boston to New York or New York to Boston. You know, they're going to different locations.
It looked exactly the same. There was no difference. I think this film knows what it wants to be, a really dumb B film, which does a perfect job of it. There's really no plot here, and then Jason Statham's coming to get you. Yeah. She killed his friend Felicia Rashard, committed suicide because she doesn't know how to use a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie just gets dumber and dumber. And Jeremy Irons like, uh-oh. You released a beekeeper. Like, oh my God, really?
Mm-hmm.
But I did like the other beekeeper scene. He was my favorite guy in the movie. You know what? We got Jason Statham. You think he's over the top? No, no, no. We got one up. Yeah, we got the other beekeeper. And he knows what they do. I'm like, oh no. So bad, Doug.
Oh, I want 10 more of these movies.
You know what's funny? I think they're going to make them. Because this couldn't have cost any money to make. It's so
no,
bad.
But it was so much fun. I loved it. No, I want 10 more beekeepers.
You can have 10 more beekeepers. It's not fun. It's rough.
Oh, it's Jason silly. Statham it's, makes it fun.
But yes. He makes it. I will give you that. He does make this film fun. Is it good? Not a chance.
No, it's not good. It's
There's
fun.
There's no plot. Zero plot that I... Somebody wrote five lines. Money, president, beekeeper.
Yeah.
What the?
Yeah.
Of course, Josh Hutcherson's mom's the president. Of course. Who else would she be?
Well, yeah. They got a Doctor Who reference in there because she plays the head of UNIT in Doctor Who. So.
Oh, see, I had no idea.
So, yeah, they actually had a British woman playing the president of the United States, which was...
Best line of the movie? Well, Mom, what did you expect me to do? I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to tell them about you. I'm like, really? Why did he just shoot them all? Take out the mom. Take out him. Take out Jeremy Irons and just move on.
Because then you can't set up the sequel.
True.
I don't know.
I'm not saying this is not watchable. I think I gave it a 2.
Okay.
Which is below average. Well, probably for me, it's right at average, but that's just me. It's better than my Greek Fact Week rating 3. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Well, next we have The Outfit, directed by Graham Moore, starring Mark Rylance, Zoe Deutsch, Johnny Flynn, and Dylan O'Brien.
Do you watch what movie?
Called The Outfit.
This is the one you watched the wrong movie.
Oh.
You're supposed to watch the one with Robert De Niro. Robert Duvall.
Oh.
1974. Oh. I even put it on the list.
I did not see. I just saw The Outfit. So I watched the more recent one with Mark Rylance.
Oh, my God. Okay, I've seen that one too. Is that the one where he's making stuff?
He's like a suit maker.
We can do that one. You watched the wrong one. I wanted to do the Robert Duvall film.
Okay.
With Joe Don Baker, which is the one you were supposed to. And I did put it on the year. I could pull up the email because I know I put the year for The Outfit.
I will look, but I don't remember seeing
the year.
Maybe
I forgot.
But anyway.
I forget? Okay. Go on. I remember the film being slow, but not bad, if that makes sense. Like, I enjoyed it. It had a couple of twists in it right near the end. And it was just very one location oriented, I think.
Yes, it was very one location. I'm looking at the original email. It just says outfit, no year or anything
Okay, then I'm an idiot. I meant to put the 1974 film on here because I'm like, what's he talking about? This is supposed to have, you're supposed to be watching a film with, okay, well, I'll discuss both outfits. Fine. I want you to talk about the other one.
But Mark Rylance, I think he's a fantastic actor, and absolutely, he was really good in this.
He's excellent.
He was great as the lead. He is a suit maker in Chicago. The outfit of the title represents, you know, the mafia families and organized crime in general. So he does work for like a local mafia family, and they come to him for stuff, but he also has a Dropbox where they get notes back and forth from the outfit. And yes, something goes wrong. The mafia boss's son, played by Dylan O'Brien, he ends up getting a bit too big for his britches and starts some trouble with another family. There are double crosses with this suit maker stuck in the middle, but we find out he has a darker past than we thought. He actually is on the run from some British mafia families, and so he knows all about how to protect himself, protect his employee Zoe Deutsch, and it builds to this kind of bloody ending where people get stabbed with shears. I actually enjoyed this movie. I wouldn't say it was great. I would say it's a 3 out of 5, but I enjoyed this one.
What I can remember, I agree with what you said. I found it a little slow, I think, for me. I think the middle was very slow because I kept having long discussions with the tailor, and I'm like, let's get this moving, guys. I got the point. Let's get this moving. You know what? We'll save the other outfit for 2 episodes for now because I really want you to see it.
Okay.
I think you'll like it. It's an early Robert Duvall with Joe Don Baker.
Is it based on the Donald Westlake, right? Is it Parker? Okay.
It's a Parker book. I want you to see it.
Okay.
That's why. And I got it from my Quentin book. So if people want to know where I found it, it's from the Quentin Tarantino book I got. He discusses movies. And I just, I'll go into it very briefly. I just watched Greetings, the first Brian De Palma film on this past, yesterday I watched it. Which is not on a show, people, so you're not getting it. Unless Doug puts it on, I will not be putting Greetings on a show.
I think that might be a very hard film to find. I don't know where you'd even find that movie.
I have friends, thank you.
Okay. Well, I guess our next film is T.R. Baskin. Directed by Herbert Ross, starring Candace Bergen, Peter Doyle, and I guess James Caan owed the director a favor because he shows up for a very small role.
Shane, here's your movie you asked for. So my friend Shane, who I brought at the beginning of the show, we've reconnected in the last year or so. So he's the guy that's doing a Love Boat rewatch at the same time. Yeah, not that we knew either other was doing it, just sort of happened serendipitously, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So he's got a book, I think, a feminist film guide to film.
Okay.
So every once in a while he'll post films. I'm like, this sounds really interesting. So I told him I'd watch it. So that's where T.R. Baskin comes from. So I will start.
Okay.
I thought this film was fascinating. Absolutely fascinating how much I liked it. I'd never seen Candace Bergen. I knew Candace Bergen as Murphy Brown. That was it for me. That is Candace Bergen. I'd never seen her young. I've never seen her attractive, I guess I will say. Not that Candace Bergen is not attractive as an older person, but not this kind of attractiveness. And her playing a call girl impressed me. I thought it was fascinating. It's not the movie I thought I was getting into. I had really no idea what this film was about. Because you know me, I was going cold. But I like the beginning. I like that Peter Boyle hires her and gets in that, and they have like a full discussion about his life.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I liked how she, her job outside of this, what she did. I thought that, Carol, was that the woman that talks to everybody? If you need to talk to somebody, talk to me. The HR lady?
Yeah.
I thought she was great.
Who does bees. Only does bees. Or, yeah.
Yes. Oh, only does bees or something. And you're the... I thought this movie was great. I mean, is there a lot going on? No. But for me, I found it fascinating. I can't believe this film was made, first of all. It seems a very bizarre movie to be made. And I thought it showed the call girl from a different angle. You know, like those phone calls to her parents were heavy.
Okay.
Like, overall, I thought it was fascinating. I really quite enjoyed this. I liked the look of the film. I thought it doesn't have any money. That's pretty evident. Mm-hmm. But I think Candace Bergen conveys everything I need to know throughout her acting, throughout the film. I find her very impressive by the end. And Peter Boyle does a great job, I think, too, like conveying his character and the limited things he says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I was as taken with this movie as you are.
You get to see Candace Bergen's boobs, man. It's...
Yeah, but I boobs don't make a movie good for me.
I just wanted to bug you.
But yeah, she was very good. I thought Peter Boyle was very good. James Caan, like I said, I think he probably owed the director a favor. He shows up for just a couple scenes, which I think is kind of a detriment to this movie, because when James Caan shows up, you're like, oh. This is what a real movie star is. Candace Bergen, Peter Boyle, they were great, but they're character actors. They're not
100%
movie stars. They don't have the charisma to hold the camera quite like James Caan did, especially James Caan in the 70s.
I agree.
When he comes in, he completely dominates his two scenes. But yeah, I think... It was well acted, well written. I just kind of see why it's kind of a forgotten film. There really isn't.
Oh, there's nothing for you to hold on to.
There's not once too much there.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I think I gave it a 3 out of 5. I just really liked it. I enjoyed it, but I mean, it's not going to blow anybody away.
Yeah,
I
think
you don't need to ever revisit it.
I gave it a 3. I think I gave it a 3 as well. Just it was very good. Just kind of forgettable in the grand scheme of things.
But I think it's one of those films you recommend. I could recommend this film to somebody if they wanted something different to watch and said, give me something I've never heard of. T.R. Baskin would totally be my go-to right now. Miracle Mile would be another one.
It kind of reminded me of like those 50s screwball comedies with her... With her smart alecky answers to all the questions, it kind of reminded me of those dialogues from like the screwball comedies of the 50s or so.
But I think that's why I liked it. It was done in a different format. They kind of moved it around a bit more.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I enjoyed it, but I'm not sure I'd ever watch it again.
There's no reason to watch it again. There's just nothing here. Yeah. You've watched it, you move on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like going to a restaurant. You're like, that was okay. I don't need to come back.
Unlike The Beekeeper, which as soon as it comes out on Blu-ray, I will be watching that and drinking a ton of beer while watching it, you know, just bring on Jason Statham.
Do you have room for another DVD or Blu-ray?
Yeah, I'll find room for Statham.
Oh, God. Just send them to me. They won't fit. Just... Send them to me. I'll take them.
All right, so now we'll go on to Buddy Buddy, 1981's, directed by Billy Wilder, his last movie that he wrote and directed, starring Jack Lemmon, Walter Matthau, and Klaus Kinski. I will be 100% honest here. I only made it through the first half hour or so. I really just didn't find the antics in this movie that amusing, which kind of bummed me out because I like Billy Wilder. I like Matthau and Lemmon together, but this movie just didn't really hold my interest at all. I will be honest with you.
Okay. Doug didn't make it to the best parts of the film, which happened after the first half an hour, which are It's a clunky opener. It's a literal clunky opener. Jack Lemmon trying to kill himself just kind of sets the film in motion, but you really don't know that. I love the opener. Actually, I got to say, Walter Matthau blowing the guy up with the mailbox was great. And just continued to walk down the street. I kind of like that opener. Yeah, the first, right after that, the next 20 minutes, half an hour, is really slow. Because they're kind of working out their friendship, because they're not friends in this film. They just sort of, they're hotel mates. They're in the same hotel together. So it goes from there that Jack Lemmon finally convinced Walter Matthau to go visit his wife, who's with a sex doctor. So that's, you probably didn't get that far. So fine, they go see him, and then he finds out that Jack Lemmon, what's going on, so he comes to look for Jack Lemmon. Okay, I'm skipping a lot of stuff here, but that's fine. So this is the best part. So now we're in the last 20 minutes. He learns that Walter Matthau's a hitman, and he's got to do the hit. So people, if you didn't, you should listen. We spoil everything, you're out of luck. So Matthau's got drugs in him because the doctor drugged him thinking he was Matthau because Lemmon hit him in the face and he couldn't talk. So Lemmon has to take the shot. Okay? But there's another twist there. I don't want to ruin it. Because if he, okay? So something happens. Boom, boom, boom. Kind of works out. I'll leave it at that. Matthau has this island he wants to live on. So he goes to this island, and he's all happy living with his tribe mates. And guess who shows up at the end of the film? Jack Lemmon. Jack Lemmon. And that's it. And not, I don't think I ruined enough of it. And that's really the film. You know what? In the end, I kind of liked it. I didn't love it, but after getting through all that, I loved the end. The end was so much fun. It's nonsense to no end, but I really, really liked the end. I thought it was good.
Maybe I'll give it another shot, but yeah, it just didn't capture me.
This one's easy to find. It's only available on YouTube. Somebody's uploaded it on YouTube. It's the only place I could find it. I don't know where you eventually found it.
I found it on YouTube because you pointed me in the right direction.
It's the only place I could find this film. I looked and looked and looked trying to rent it places, but I couldn't find it anywhere. They said it was on my Amazon Prime, but it wasn't there.
Okay.
So, no, I don't know. I'm not saying give this film a visit, saying, yeah, it's Sunset Boulevard or even Fortune Cookie. I'm just saying make it through that clunky first 40 minutes.
Okay.
Like, it is really clunky, and it's probably still clunky for the next 20 minutes, but it's just kind of fun. And then it gets a little bit better as it goes on till the end.
Okay. I'll give it another shot eventually.
I don't care if you do. We've discussed it. We're moving on. It's done. And I told you my Walter Matthau about meeting Walter Matthau. I told you that story, I think.
Yes.
I never met Jack Lemmon or Klaus Kinski, so I have no stories there.
Okay. Well, we're up to our last movie of the episode. It is Godzilla versus Destoroyah from 1995, directed by Takeo Okawara, starring Takuro Tatsumi and Yoko Ishino.
Oh, great actors.
I will say again, I completely forgot that this was a direct sequel to the previous film, which was Godzilla versus Space Godzilla. It's been a few years since I've seen this, so I looked it up on Wikipedia. I'm not going to lie. The main thing I remembered about this movie is Godzilla with the red spots on him because he's going into like nuclear meltdown, and he ends up fighting like a giant crab monster at the end. But yeah, it was decent. I do remember that there was big hype to this because Godzilla dies in this movie. So when I first saw this, I was like, oh, this is the last Godzilla film. He dies. But like all good movie monsters, his son, Godzilla Jr., absorbs his radiation and I guess morphs into the Godzilla for the next generation. So, yes, Godzilla dies, but we do get Godzilla again in the form of young Godzilla absorbing his radiation and going on to live.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I also did like that it also harkens back to the very original Godzilla film with the oxygen destroyer as one of the weapons used to go after Godzilla and these crab monsters.
Well, this one I actually liked. This is, I thought, one of the best entries into the franchise lately. Was this one. Again, it had a plot. How hard is it to make a plot? I don't know, but these guys finally got one right. I thought the action looked good. I thought Godzilla looked good. I liked the ideas. I thought they had a lot of discussion. Again, they take the onus off Godzilla doing the work. And to make a good Godzilla film, you got to take Godzilla out of the film and just put him in selected times and obviously have him at the end to do his job. Yes. To beat whatever man has screwed up or whatever showed up that week to fight him in the movie of the week. I mean, Godzilla's basically done wrestling. Really, you know what I mean? You got to build up the guy, the main superhero, the heavyweight champion has to come in, the Hogan of whatever, to beat the guy. And that's it. But I think this one had a plot, had fleshed out characters, and it was actually interesting.
And the makeup was good. I liked
the makeup was good. So I thought that was good. For Godzilla franchise, I think we're finally, hopefully the last few, because I haven't seen Shin Godzilla yet. So we're getting closer.
Oh, yeah. That is one of my favorites, I will be honest.
You keep telling me. We're getting there.
Yes.
Okay. We're getting there. We finished Wilder. We're still working on Godzilla. We got like five left? I think five left.
Something like that, yeah.
So what are we going to do, Doug, when there's going to be two Godzilla movies on the same episode? Have a new Kong Godzilla movie? And well, it depends who gets it, me or you, I guess, is really the question. So the last question I have, did you buy anything, Doug?
Actually, I did. Criterion had a 50% off 24-hour sale.
Didn't tell me. I see how this works. Sorry.
So I got what did I get here? It's a Ride with the Devil. It's a Ang Lee movie.
Heard of it, never seen it.
I got it because Jeffrey Wright's in it, and I've always liked Jeffrey Wright, but after seeing American Fiction, he's now like one of my favorite actors working today. I also got, it's The Roaring Twenties starring Humphrey Bogart and James Cagney.
I have not seen it.
And then the last one, I actually watched it this morning because it's been a few years since I've seen it. 4K release of Trainspotting.
And that's what I haven't seen in years. That again. After
never
that,
again?
It grossed me out, that film. One scene where the guy takes
the toilet?
That's the one. I had so many issues with that film. The way they treat their friend with the sex tape and this. And I said, you know what?
Oh, yeah.
I don't like these people.
No,
time with them again. I don't like them. I didn't enjoy my experience of Trainspotting. I think I'm passing.
Okay.
I don't think I could ever watch Trainspotting again, even though I saw it. Didn't they make it two?
Yeah, they did.
Then I did watch Trainspotting 2.
Trainspotting 2 was surprisingly better than I thought it would be.
I can't remember it at all, but me and my 600 films I watch a year, I tend to forget things quickly. Yes.
But that's it. That's what I got. Yep.
We're done. We're finished. I can give the big line. If they make it,
we will watch it eventually after a few weeks.